The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
And on the eve of 2012, will this be the year coming up that we do turn it around, that we do come together? Let's hope so. I have a great show for you, even though this is kind of a holiday week, a little bit difficult to reach guests between Christmas and Hanukkah, last night being the last night of Hanukkah and New Year's. I had a big Hanukkah party at my house, which is why I was looking for guests this morning, kind of short notice, but lining up a great show despite that. First up is going to be my friend and favorite climate convert, D.R. Tucker, talking about environmental news of the past week. In the second segment, we're going to take a look at the hospitality industry, see what hotels are doing to green their services and practices and buildings. That's kind of exciting. Lots of activity there, especially with the Hilton chain of hotels. And in the third segment, we're going to be talking to someone who heads up a clean energy coalition who has just recently crossed my radar screen, and he's very knowledgeable about how the key is to go local. But first, we're going to take a national and global look at what's going on, a little bit about the big announcement that came across the news wires just as we finished our show last week on Wednesday, and that is good news for all of us who are concerned about mercury poisoning, and I happen to be one who has high levels of mercury. I don't know if it's all the fish, probably related to the emissions of methylmercury from coal-fired power plants, and this ruling by the EPA really is a big deal, and we're going to talk about that with DR in just a second. Also, just reflecting back on Durban, hoping to have Stephen Lacey on the show next week. He was there at the climate conference talks. I have not ignored that issue or didn't mean to ignore that story, just when trying to get somebody on who was actually there, and he's been unavailable the last 2 weeks but promised to come on the show soon, so look forward to that. But now it is my great pleasure to welcome to the Green Front my friend D.R. Tucker. And D.R., belated happy Christmas holiday season to you. Here we are on the eve of a new year, and how are you feeling about things on the Green Front?
Well, always positive. You know, you get nowhere with pessimism, as I've learned over the years. So I'm very optimistic that 2012 will be a year of more gains for the green movement, and hopefully we'll be at the forefront of those gains.
And for those of us, those of you who don't know, DR and I have become friends over the last, I guess it's just been a little over, about 8 months now since I read his column, The Confessions of a Climate Convert, that was on grist.org, and that was right around the time I was on Sean Hannity's show, and I mentioned that they should do what DR did, which is actually read the science. Based on their latest spewings, it seems that they, of course, refuse to do that, which, you know, tells you something right there. They invest a lot of time and energy, you know, doubting climate scientists and dissing those of us who are believers, if you can actually call people who, yes, read the science and believe it, believers, or as Chris Horner called me, an earther. We earthers, yes, do take seriously what we are hearing from the world's climate scientists. After that, I just was intrigued by DR's conversion to, you know, believing that climate change is a real threat and that our government does have a role in combating this. And he has been busy combating his libertarian friends since then, trying to convince them that they, too, should shut up and read the science. Any progress there, DR?
No progress, with the exception of there is at least one friend who is a big fan of Ron Bailey of Reason Magazine, who's the writer who says, yes, the science is real, but it would be too expensive to do anything about it. He's sort of like Jim Manzi at National Review. And I always joke to him that if Ron Bailey of Reason Magazine ever turned around and said, let's put a price on carbon, yes, the investment in reducing emissions is worth it, he would be gone from Reason Magazine by the afternoon.
Huh. Yeah. Well, what gives you hope then, on this time when we're not seeing much, you know, activity in Durban? I mean, there was some. I mean, it ended on a kind of a medium note, not any really great solid gains, but agreement to continue the conversation. I guess that's as much as we can hope for these days. from the international conferences.
Absolutely. It's there was a positive note. It was sort of offset by some of the recent comments by Tim Worth, who noted that, you know, the leadership does have to come from the United States, and with specific regard to the Obama administration, that the leadership on climate is not there. And, you know, my way of thinking is that President Obama should realize that, you know, I hate to put things in raw political terms, but climate can be a wedge issue. When you have the denialism or the pandering to denialism on the part of all the Republican candidates, you know, President Obama should take a leadership role and say, you know, take a look at the billions of dollars worth of storms, you know, the extreme weather events that we've had to pay out all this money for. Take a look at the science and the accuracy of the science and what's being projected if we don't take action. And basically, you know, use the momentum supplied by Durbin and use the momentum such as it is provided by the events of this past year to say it is now time to take action and to call out the Republican Party on its denial and on its refusal to do anything about it. There's no political loss in using climate as, again, not to be too blinked about it, but as a wedge issue, a wedge political issue.
And yet the only Republican presidential contender who has acknowledged that he is concerned about climate change certainly does think it's real, is John Huntsman. And funny how he has not been in the news at all the last couple of weeks.
He seems to have faded into the ether as the ideology enforcers in the Republican Party have decided to turn their guns on Ron Paul instead of Huntsman. They were blasting away at Huntsman before, but now they're going after Paul.
What does Ron Paul say about climate change? I'm not sure I know.
Ron Paul is, as you might expect, one of these sort of hardcore libertarians, and as it is, he's not convinced by the science. He has called for, you know, getting rid of the EPA. He's one of these guys that basically regards any sort of environmental protection as being an infringement upon personal liberty. The only thing I can say about Ron Paul that is positive in that respect is that I think that he comes to his climate skepticism from an honest libertarian standpoint. I don't think that he's a hack for the oil and coal industry, whereas I think his son Rand Paul is simply one of these people who is willing to do whatever the Kentucky coal industry wants him to do, which is why he's such a denier.
And of course, we know where Newt Gingrich now stands, now that he's renounced his earlier moment of sanity in appearing in an ad with Nancy Pelosi saying, regardless of our political differences, we need to act on climate change.
Yes, which he now rejects, and which he now says, you know, that was a stupid move on his part, even though it was not. And even though, you know, if Gingrich had stood his ground, he could have attracted a lot of moderate and independent voters who want leadership from whichever party on this matter. I made reference earlier to, or in my earlier conversations with you, to the Pew Research Center study that recently came out showing that the only people who reject the science are hardcore conservative Republicans. Even moderate Republicans accept the scientific findings indicating man-made role in climate change. So had Gingrich, you know, shown the courage of his convictions, or at least the courage of his convictions that he showed in 2007 in his dialogue with John Kerry and in 2008 in that speech with Nancy Pelosi, perhaps you would have seen, you know, some sort of bipartisan move to do something about the climate problem. But as it is, it's totally in the Democratic Party's hands now. That's the interesting thing, not only about climate change specifically, but also with the matter of the Keystone XL pipeline, where since you have even John Huntsman, even Huntsman has said that he would be for the building of the pipeline. And frankly, if I were President Obama, I would you know, make it clear that I'm not going to sign off on the pipeline, and I'm going to explain why, because of the risks it poses to the climate, because of the risks it poses to the environment. I call it BP2 myself, and basically, again, use that as a political wedge issue. There's no downside for him to do this.
Hmm. And then switching over to the gift we did get at the end of the year, just in time for the holidays, was action finally on coal-fired power plants and limiting the mercury that's been spewing out of them. Did that surprise you?
It didn't surprise me, actually. What surprised me is how long it took for these new, stronger standards to be, you know, to be put in place, or at least to be on the path towards being put in place. Obama noted that, you know, this has been 21 years in the making, going all the way back to the 1990 Clean Air Act, which was signed into law by President George H.W. Bush to the scorn of the hardcore conservatives at the time. and the fact that it's been a 21-year fight to have clean air, it says something very, very negative and very, very pathetic about our current political system. Paul Krugman this past Monday had a great piece in the New York Times pointing out that any effort to use government to have clean air or clean water is going to meet with the consternation of the hardcore conservatives, but it is because they will react with such consternation that you have to fight for these standards. That, you know, if they are that short-sighted in terms of being opposed to governmental efforts to clean up our air and clean up our water, that's something that Democrats should hammer away at them on.
You would think. And, you know, President Obama is looking a bit greener to those of us who are paying close attention with that happening on his watch, you know, EPA ruling, and also the fuel efficiency standards that he has put into place. And it will take a few years, but they were really quite aggressive, much more so than what we were seeing, you know, in earlier years. So perhaps he can redeem himself if he is reelected. And I'll ask you, my Republican friend, based on just looking through a green lens, would you actually consider voting for President Obama if none of the Republican candidates step up and whoever wins the primary, in fact, continues to say arrogantly that he is not concerned about climate change, doesn't quite believe it, the science is not in, et cetera?
I've come to the conclusion that the only way you're going to see any action on climate is through a Democratic president and a Democratic House and Senate. I mean, I was one of these guys a few years ago. I would snarl with my conservative friends, the ones who were then I thought were my friends, about, you know, oh, the Pelosi-Reid agenda. Now I realize that the Pelosi-Reid agenda is what you would need in order to have actual action on climate. I mean, only President Obama would be willing to sign into law or pass the House and Senate the Pete Stark bill, the Save Our Climate Act, which is being backed by such entities as Citizens Climate Lobby. It's a fee and dividend proposal. And as I tell the libertarian friends who will still speak to me, if any Republican in the House or Senate proposed an act like that, he would be politically torn to shreds by the conservative media, or as a friend of mine calls it, the conservative entertainment complex. So the way things are polarized right now, if you want climate action, and I do, your only path is a Democratic path. It's still a bit weird for me to say that, but in reality, look, you know, remember this thing Krugman noted about the mercury pollution standards. You know, elections have consequences, and the McCain administration would not have implemented those mercury pollution standards. Similarly, the way the Republican Party is structured right now, there is no Republican, even Huntsman, who would be willing to put actual carbon pricing into place, who would be willing to promote and push for such legislation. So you have to go into the Democratic camp. Again, kind of odd for me to say, kind of weird for me to say, but it's reality.
Good for me to hear, actually. I appreciate that candor. And, of course, John Huntsman also thinks Keystone is a good idea, at last word.
Yeah.
And that tells those of us following that closely where he's really at.
All the Republican candidates, to my knowledge, are all gung-ho for the Keystone XL pipeline, which, again, I mean, you know, here in Massachusetts, we were confronted with this because, you know, our United States Senator Scott Brown said he's all for it, and his likely Democratic opponent, Elizabeth Warren, is against it. And as I told a friend of mine, you know, Scott Brown is saying, in essence, if you're one of those enviros, if you're one of those tree huggers, don't vote for me. And I say in response, duly noted.
Okay, so it should be an interesting primary season coming up right around the corner here, right after the first of the year.
Yes, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see if the sort of the ideological litmus test stuff ends up, you know, biting the Republican Party right in the behind, not only on climate change, but on a whole host of other issues. The other day I had a chance to come across an old speech by the late Jack Kemp, who noted that, you know, unity in the party does not require unanimity, and we don't all have to march in lockstep. While Kemp himself was not what you'd call a climate hawk, in fact, he was quite the opposite. He was very, very much anti-Kyoto. You wonder what Kemp would say when he would see these sort of ideological purges, you know, like what was done to Congressman Bob Inglis in South Carolina, what was done to Mike Castle in the U.S. Senate race in Delaware, what's done to anybody on the right who says that climate change is not a hoax, anybody on the right who rejects Da Vinci Code-style conspiracy theories about climate scientists. You wonder what Kemp would say, even though he was not a climate hawk himself.
Okay. Any last thoughts before we switch gears and go from green politics to green practices in the hotel industry?
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to wish you a happy new year. I am honored to be a friend of yours. You inspire me with your courage and your energy in terms of leading the fight on your end to protect our planet and to have a clean and livable climate for future generations. One of the high points of this past year has been being a friend of yours and making acquaintance with you. And I just want to thank you so much for all your efforts and just to encourage you to keep up the good fight in 2012 and beyond.
Thank you, dear. I did not know you were going to say that. So that was not a plant. It was not a shill question. I really appreciate that. I'm touched by it. And really all I'm trying to do is get the leading green thinkers and actors together, you know, in a place where those who are interested, and of course that should be all of us, and that's the goal, is to grow the choir in 2012. It has been for the last dozen years or so for me, just to, you know, connect the dots for more people, because we can't do this alone, those of us on both sides of the aisle, now that I have my Republican climate activist friend, D.R. Tucker, you know, to understand what's at stake and to get in touch with what we love and most value. There was a great article in the Earth Island Journal called, you know, Why It's Not Okay to Wreck the World, and it's written by two philosophers who were going across the country speaking to any groups that they can gather about the morality of ignoring climate change and how it is a moral call to action, you know, based on our values. If we value our children and grandchildren and, you know, even if you're not a parent, you know, generations to come, then isn't it not our obligation to do something, everything we can, to combat climate change, not to mention what's going on with our oceans, with our species, with our air. And, you know, that's what I hope to do in 2012 is just, you know, either grow this platform here on PRN or get on a platform that's big enough to really, you know, rally the masses, because Lord knows there's a lot of reasons to get organized, come together, and it should cross the party lines. It should be transpartisan. I like that term. I'm sure you do too, dear. So thanks for all you've done.
Well, Richard Nixon said that environmentalism was a cause beyond party and faction. I wish some Republicans would remember that.
Well, you are so compelling in the fact that you are a conservative turned moderate Republican because of the climate issue, and we're going to be hearing a lot more from you in this forum and perhaps in a television format as well in 2012. So I wish you a happy Green New Year, D.R. Tucker, and thanks for all you've